gift or magic be done for good? Today on Truth Be Told, we're going to do the School of Magic. We're going to talk about healing and using natural herbs to set good intentions and also spells that hopefully can heal the world and heal ourselves. Today we have Amy Blackthorne, the Green Witch, and talking about her guide to the essential oils for spellcraft, rituals, and healing. This should be a good time, so please get your questions ready. I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Please welcome to the Truth Be Told studios for the first time, the Green Witch, Amy Blackthorne. Hello, Miss Amy.
How you doing? I'm so glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you here, and I'm excited to have you on the show. We've had a White Witch on before. Patty Negri, who is one of our regulars, and now I have a Green Witch. And I see that title, and I kind of want to know, first off, what is a Green Witch versus every other witch there is out there?
Well, it actually came about because there's a lot of times people get, do you white magic or do you black magic? Are you good witch or bad witch? And so Green Witch just cuts right through all of that. There's no dichotomy. It's just, hey, I work with plants.
Right, right. That period. I work with plants. Did you grow up like growing a garden with your grandparents and parents, or how did you get into the plant world?
It's so funny. I was born and raised in a very small, little niche area of Baltimore City.
Oh.
So there was one tree in our yard. We had a postage stamp of grass, and that was
right.
It. And during my formative years, they'd send us out to play in the yard, and I found mint growing by the basement steps. And my mom says, oh, that's mint. You can eat that. You can use it to flavor stuff. And
right,
I'm thinking,
right.
This, but it came out of the ground where dirt is. Like,
right.
don't you tell us, like, don't eat things off the ground? Isn't that a thing that happens?
Right.
And so it just fascinated me that this plant had uses and smells and could do all sorts of things just growing out of the ground like that. I was, probably kindergarten, so it hadn't occurred to me that food actually comes out of the ground.
Right, right.
So by the time we moved to the suburbs of Baltimore County, we actually had a yard, and there's plants, and there's trees, and there's room to move around for a kid. And I noticed by the basement windows for the new house, there's this beautiful pink flower growing on a little bush. And so I go over, I'm checking it out, I'm looking at the petals, I'm looking at the leaves, and one of the petals falls out of my hand. And I look inside, this little teeny cup is a black seed. And my mind is blown. The fact that it started out as a plant and then it made a flower and now there are seeds. Like, this is the most magical thing I've ever seen in my life. I am blown away. And my mom's like, yeah, that's how plants work. That's where food comes from. These are things. But growing up in the city where, you there's one tree for every block.
Right,
you don't get
right.
to know these things.
Right.
So I was immediately entranced by anything that was growing out of the ground, to the point where I was running up and down with my little huffy bike to the neighbors doing chores for spare change so I could grow my own little window box full of petunias so I could take part in this magic of growing things too.
Well, I grew up in the country in Kansas. My grandma and grandfather both were great at growing gardens. Like, we grew up in a small town, so we had probably a quarter of an acre, quarter of a block of each in our hometown. So we had big gardens. My dad was also great at growing gardens. My mom helped. I didn't get that green thumb. I can't keep a plant alive for anything. For some reason, I didn't get that. But I do find it fascinating that people that are able to grow plants, it does take a knack, and it does take a skill to be able to harvest and grow goods to sell and or to eat, for your family, or for, in your case, working with herbs and plants that you can use in spells and all that stuff. But we'll get into that here in a second. But so was your family, interested in growing gardens or plants, or no? Was mama growing plants in
no,
the house or not?
She was, my mom was raised by her father, and she raised her two younger brothers.
Oh, okay.
So she was home by herself.
Yeah.
They lived in an apartment until she moved in with my father and they got married.
Oh.
She had no Like, I know grass grows in dirt, but that's about it. it was my own sort of journey off to the side. Like, okay, this is a thing that happens. I've got to figure out how it works and why it works and what doesn't work. As the little scientific 10-year-old I was, you find a bird feather and I'm trying to cross pollinate the purple petunias with the red petunias and see if I can get a stripe out of something. It was just all an experiment to me. It wasn't until I was 11 and sharing a room with my older sister, Holly, where she brought home the first book on witchcraft that I had ever seen.
Oh, so your sister introduced you.
Unintentionally, absolutely.
Yeah, that's great.
Anyone who has a younger sibling knows the fastest way to get them involved in your business is to tell them to go away.
Right. Well, I was the baby, so that is true.
As soon as she was asleep, I snuck into her book bag to see what she was giggling and hiding. And I found Scott Cunningham's Wicca, A Guide for a Solitary Practitioner. And so I'm reading it by the light of the garage down the street. I'm not even risking a flashlight. I read that thing in probably 2 hours and it changed my life.
So from that point on, your direction was kind of decided, or what did it take you a while to?
Oh no. The minute I realized the stuff that I had always thought as a kid had a name and it was a real thing. I was done. This is my life now. This is where we're going.
Well, I mean, again, I don't know how old you are and I'm not going to ask you. You're probably like 22. But, you know, where I grew up, talking about witchcraft and anything of the sort was considered evil, was considered, you know, a negative energy, evil demon, all that stuff. What was it like in your house growing up? Was that something that was looked down upon, or was it encouraged to kind of seek your own path?
We were sent to whichever church was closest to where we live. They didn't. Yeah. My parents didn't care about denominations or anything. They're just like, okay, this will help you make a more rounded person. So go and do this on Sundays, and we'll see when you get done. They never went to church themselves.
Right.
So it was a free babysitter for part of the time on Sundays. And so, the last church that we went to was a Assemblies of God church.
Mm. Oh, okay.
And they were very, like, they want everybody to go into the missionary service. They want, you know, go and spread the word. And it's like, I don't feel like that's a kosher thing to do. I don't think that doesn't seem like a good thing. It just makes me feel like other people are doing the wrong thing. Everybody's right. Got their own thing.
Right.
So I was very much leaning towards the part where this isn't quite what I'm looking for. And by the time I was feeling my way out, the books that I was finding felt like they filled that little niche that I needed. And so I'd still go with friends if they asked me to, but it was never the same. You know, I wanted the approval of the people who ran the church, but I didn't actually want to do the things that they wanted me to do.
Right. Right.
It was a very interesting dichotomy. There was definitely some friction there.
Well, like, as you know, I mean, doing that, do you verbally say now that you are a witch? Because Wicca is definitely a religion type. I mean, that's so, you know, a lot of, like I said, when was that point that you were freely saying I'm part of the Wicca community?
Probably I came out of the broom closet at 15.
Oh, at 15.
I had already decided that this was important to me, that I was
okay.
Head over heels, I was all in. So I waited until my mother was busy cooking dinner, because, you know, then her hands are
right,
busy.
Right. Keep her busy, and then I'll sneak it in there.
Exactly. Well, just so I sidle up to the stove. Mom, I'm a witch. She goes, oh, okay.
Who called you that? Who called you that?
she says, have you told your dad yet? Like, she's trying really hard not to react, and I can see this as an adult now. She's trying so hard to be supportive.
Right.
But her brain is just telling her this is a fad, and she'll get over it at some point.
Right.
So I go outside, and my stepdad is in the garden. He's building a little trellis for his clematis. And I walk over, I sort of sidestep over and say, so I'm a witch. And he says, oh, I dated a witch in high school. How was your day? Like, it was not even a thing. He was just like, okay.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, that, I mean, that was a good thing. That kind of at least started your footing off on the right direction. So, like I said, I never I'm not considering myself ever a witch. I consider myself, I guess, what went from religious to the spiritual side, you know, the universe, you know, And I believe, you know, a lot of the, like Jesus and stuff, I believe possibly were here and were, you know, prophets and people, messengers or aliens or whatever you want to call them. I believe that, you know, they made an impact on the world, as you can see. But, you know, again, it's one of those things. It's like coming out of the closet type of thing, because it's, you know, you don't know how people are going to react. Well, one thing I wanted to bring up, because you've written how many books? I mean, there's
the
like
fifth one. Now the fourth one comes out in 2 weeks. That's Blackthorn's Protection Magic, and then the fifth one is Blackthorn's Botanical Wellness, and that'll probably be January 2023.
Wow. So, being a witch and a good witch, what do you think about a lot of people dabbling in witchcraft that are not quite to the point of the understanding? You know, that people say be careful with the Ouija boards, because if you don't really know how to handle or what to ask for, or opening a portal or whatever, you know, be careful. What about witchcraft? Is that something that you also need to be careful with, or is it fairly safe?
Yeah, well, you need to be careful every day. I mean, you crossing the road, you do it improperly, you can get hit by a car.
True. That is
true. The idea is not necessarily that you have to be afraid of every bits and pieces. We're right. All new at some point.
Right.
Whether it's, you know, buying a pack of birthday candles and making a wish over your birthday cake, or you're casting a spell to get a new job. There's people try and couch it in good magic versus bad magic. And the idea there isn't that this is all good or all bad or all anything. We're all just people.
Right.
If I cast a spell to get a job tomorrow, because I need money, I need to make sure my family is fed and I need that job. Guess what? Every person who didn't get that job doesn't have a job yet. It's great for me. It's bad for them. So it's all a matter of perspective. Healing magic. I cast a healing spell because my friend isn't feeling great. Okay, that sounds wonderful. But if that friend has cancer and you're prolonging their suffering because you can't bear to be without them yet, that's harmful. So it's all, we can make our best calls with the best of intentions, but it comes down to what are the things that we're willing to do and not willing to do. That's why when I have classes, I've taught internationally now. I teach all over the place, and people try and talk about black magic. Like, no, that's couching in racist terms. White is not good. Black is not bad. We're all just people.
Right.
We're trying to make the best of a bad situation and trying to help the people around us. And that's really the best thing that we can do, is just try and be a good person.
How far back does witchcraft go? I don't want to put you on the spot if you don't know, but but from your knowledge, what is your... you know, the history tell us about witchcraft?
There's the prehistoric understanding of God, goddess, man, woman.
Mm-hmm.
That's all very nebulous, and there's a lot of associations and assumptions made about it just based on cave paintings. When people talk about Wicca, Wicca is thousands of years. No, it's from the 50s, probably. Gerald Gardner said, okay, this sounds fun. This looks cool. Like, let's go do this in the woods, and started talking to people about it right as the witchcraft laws were being repealed. So the practice that we have today is definitely rooted in organized secret societies. Gardner really liked the way that stuff looked.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds fun. It's a little titillating. It's like, there's people and they're naked.
Yeah.
it's all very tongue in cheek.
Right.
So what we recognize now is probably been around since the 50s ish, but the intentions, the understandings, the associations, they can go back a bit further. There are magical alphabets that we use now that were originated in the 1400s. So the witch's alphabet you can find on a little pieces of parchment paper and sold in witchcraft stores. It's a one-to-one letter cipher in English that was been around since the 1400s. So there's individual elements that go back pretty far. And then there's the stuff like, essential oils. Me talking about doing magic with essential oils. We didn't have a whole lot of that.
Right.
You know, in the mid-90s when I started practicing, you might find a spot in a catalog that had one or two oils, but now you can go in your local grocery store and get essential oils.
And it's same with crystals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, crystals, you rarely would hear anything about crystals. Now it's like you go to these, you know, trade shows like, you know, Conscious Life Expo that just happened, and they have like 50 tables, 50 tables of just crystals, and this one's for this, and this one's for this, and what. But I honestly, I didn't hear about crystals much until the last probably 15 years. Maybe it's just, it wasn't as popular then, but do witches and witchcraft use crystals in their practices?
They absolutely can. It's actually really popular to do. They make great associations and great allies for the intentions that we have and the projects that we're working towards. Mm-hmm. And the neat thing about it is because they're hundreds of thousands and into the millions years old, you're not going to deplete that just by carrying around in your pocket for a couple days.
Right,
It's going to be there for you. It's going to be there for you when you need it. To the point where I even have, I keep selenite in front of my monitor. Just help me focus on being the best author I can be.
No, that's great. I mean, it's good to know because we do, you know, we people like me, and I work with a lot of witches and psychics and mediums and different types of people in this industry and interviewed, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people. But, I know the good, and I know there are some that are bad, not crystals, but, you know, bad, but or negative. There's so many, it's hard to understand every single element of crystals and every single element of herbs and every single element of, you know, all kinds of different things. So, yeah, so I think it's really important for people like us to ask those questions. So we kind of know going forward, if we do get a crystal, it fits us. Is getting a crystal or a stone, it's kind of like, it reminds me, remember when Harry Potter, they go and get their magic wand? It had to fit them. It was
really,
you know,
good.
Does that feel good to you? Does that wand feel good to you? Does it, you know, that it's almost like a soulmate. Can crystals or anything like that be the same? Is like, sometimes certain stones are not meant for you versus this one is your soulmate when it comes to, as to a stone?
Absolutely. When we look at not just the type of stone, but the physical stone itself. So this individual shivalingam came to my hand and I love it and it's perfect and it's good. We're going to be friends forever. But a different size or shape or texture of shivalingam may not appeal to me at all.
Right.
There's individual stones, aragonite. The personality of this particular stone and I we don't jive. Like, you could be over there,
right?
And right. That's for other people to use.
Right.
I just, they feel snotty and like puffy, very full of themselves. I don't know how you put that to a rock, but apparently that's where we're at.
Like a cat.
Yes. You know, yes, indeed.
Cats,
everybody's got their own personality.
Right. A cat's like, love me, get away from me. Love me, get away from me. Yeah. Excuse me, I've had this cough for a month. I can't get rid of it. Witch, help me. For the people in the chat room, thank you already for asking questions. We're going to probably about 5-10 minutes we'll ask those questions from the chat room. So hang in there, but thank you for the questions. All right, so we kind of went back and found out, you know, where witches kind of came from. And what was one of the reasons why Wicca, witches, became about? Was because at that time, I'm sure there were so many different types of people in the spirituality world and in religion really getting newly started when it comes to Christianity and all that stuff. Why do you think the Wicca began to really take hold and still around all these hundreds, thousands of years?
I really love the way that it really embraces people in their heart to say, you know what, this is not something that's for me. This, you know, my don't like my job, or
right.
I don't like my family being, the ability to say that you can take control of your own life, your own livelihood, and the where you are personally going in your life was so valuable for people who are seeing wars and people losing their friends, family members, loved ones. Like, they were looking for the control of their environment, and witchcraft just gives that to people. It says, you, what you need and what you desire, like, those are really important prospects, and here's how to receive them, here's how to make it happen.
Right.
And so that's why it appeals to disenfranchised people. It appeals to teenagers. It appeals to people who are looking to take control of their life and to say, my will is important too. It's not me first, it's me too. Like, I get to be in charge. I get to, we tend to take for granted the level of control we have as adults. But when we look at what teenagers have to deal with, it's a lot. It's a lot, a lot.
Well, actually, one of the questions, and this kind of goes back in the chat room, can you be a Christian and a witch at the same time?
Absolutely. I know a lot of Christian witches. I know atheist witches.
How does that work? Because a lot of Christianity looks down on witchcraft. So how does that work?
The line that gets totted out there is, thou shalt not suffer witch to live. And, oh, this is the little shield that we're going to bang you over the head with. The original translation was not witch, it was poisoner, a poisoner of wells. So if someone poisons your whole town, well, then they get put to death. It's not necessarily someone who practices magic. That was a change that was made during the King James version of the Bible. Before that, it was just like, hey, don't poison people. How about that?
Right, right.
So we can come up with the ideas. We can show the illustrations of the magical practices in the Bible. I mean, the books of Psalms are entire books of spells. You can really do a lot with showing people how those align with each other. I know there's actually a couple really fabulous podcasts that I've been invited to where people were Christian witches, and they were very positive in their experience and their practice, and usually pretty well accompanied in their own communities, understood and accepted.
That's great. And do you think the negativity, you know, like the Salem witch trials and all that stuff, a lot of it came from the Christian community at that time, the religion part, maybe not just Christian, but the religious part of the sector. Do you feel like a lot of witchcraft got the negative rap from the religious part to kind of build their power up? Or what do you think? Do you think that, I think that might be one of the cases.
That's definitely part of it. What happens with us as people, you know, as the group of people, when bad things happen, we want to think that there's something we can do about it. It's the just world fallacy. Well, only bad things will only happen to me if I'm a bad person.
Right.
So if you try and be a good person, bad things only happen to bad people. They happen to those people over there. So in Salem, they had a couple really bad, wet winters. A lot of people died. A lot of people got sick.
Blamed it on the witches.
Blame it on the witches. Because at that point, when those girls became afflicted and started having convulsions and screaming fits, and it's the very common theory right now is that the wheat that they were growing and storing and making for all winter, their breads and whatnot, had become infected with a fungus called ergot, which has similar effects on the human body as an acid trip.
Oh, really?
So them seeing figures dancing off, it's all the religious emphasis that had been put on in their lives by their parents.
Interesting.
Saying, if you do this, you're with the devil. The devil, the devil, the devil did it. So you give them a bad, give them the brown acid, guess what's going to happen? They're going to see the things they've been told their whole lives are waiting for them if they step out of line.
Right. Wow, that's interesting. I've never heard that before. So that's a new information. I love that. I love hearing new stuff. Yeah, so I think now that a lot of people are actually, and you know, people don't hate me, but it's the truth that a lot of people are leaving the church now.
Oh yeah.
In droves. I think, you know, because look, you know, look how much the Catholic church, you know, millions of people died, you know, because of the Catholic Church way back then, you know, in the religious wars over the Protestants. If you watched the Queen Elizabeth I, you saw how the Catholic Church did not like her because she was a Protestant. Mm-hmm. And so nowadays, you know, people are seeing more the spiritual side, and it's not... And Christianity, you know, don't get me wrong, there are amazing Christians, but there's a lot of leadership, just like in the governments, that you know, teach people to judgment, and you're wrong, and everything, trying to control people, and I think people are just tired of it, and I think that's why the paranormal world, such as our, you know, community, is growing and popular, and witchcraft is becoming mainstream, and UFOs and everything is starting to really come to the surface, I think, because I think people are just tired of being told lies when it comes to religion. Nothing against Christianity, because I think Christianity itself is good. I think the meaning of it was great. I think it's just the leadership of Christianity is where we went wrong. So now that we're seeing more and more people accepting witches and Wicca, more people are getting involved in it and wanting to convert to Wicca. For someone like you, that's probably exciting, because how long have you been doing or been a Wicca itself, in Wicca itself?
28 years.
Oh my goodness. So you've been doing this a while. But yeah. When people come to you and say, I'm really interested in becoming part of the Wicca community, where do you start them on? How do you get them in the right direction to make sure they do this right?
I give a lot of homework.
Homework? You turned me off right there.
one of the pages on my website is just a giant suggested reading list, because that's exactly the response that a lot of people give. They want to light candles and feel good about themselves, but when you tell them there's liturgy and there's study and there's practice that goes along with it, they're like, I really just want to be cool for 5 minutes, so they wander away. But a good bit of those people say, okay, I'm here for it, I'm understanding, and mm-hmm. I'd like to know some more about it. So every religion, anything that's popular has people who flock to it because it's popular at the moment. But there's more people than not say, hey, this has something to offer and I'd like to stick around. Usually it's somewhere on the umbrella of paganism that Wicca falls under. But each of those specific practices draws their own people. Everyone has their own ideas of what's important to them. So yeah, some people wander over to the crystal healing for a couple of years and they come back to check out the Kabbalah. Everybody's got their own spoke of the wheel that they like to hang out in, and mine just happens to be plants. There's a lot of work that we can do together as allies, and I don't have to hear talk. I can just talk to the plants.
Right. Well, okay, bringing up the plants, I mean, that's kind of where we're heading anyway. If you watch Hocus Pocus and all these other witch shows, there's always the spell book, and then there's the potions, and we're changing kids into whatever it is. Of course, Hollywood's always going to make it even more extravagant than it is. But when it comes to plants in your line of work, what can, as we know, plants can heal us in a lot of ways. A lot of the world's health problems could be solved with plants, as long as we're not kill them all before we find out the truth about certain diseases. But how can plants help us as a society, as a whole, the human race? How can something we look outside our window every day and just see a green leaf turn into something that can save our planet?
That's so great. It's a great question, because we take it for granted that we look out the window mm-hmm. and there's that plant.
Right.
That plant could be a sorrow cactus in Arizona, or it could be an oak tree in the middle of Maryland. We take it for granted because we see it so often. That doesn't mean it's not special, and it doesn't mean it's not magical. We have this dichotomy that exists in our brains and in our society, where if it's magical, it's other. And if it's mundane and we see it every day, it can't possibly be magic. So it's over here. And those two things are separate.
Right.
And they never come back together. That's not the case at all. The dandelion weeds growing in your sidewalk have the kidney cleansing, and they can flush out extra bile in your tear ducts and all sorts of great stuff for your system. But we think because we don't want it in our yards, it must not be worth anything. But the plants that we have are reaching out to work with us in a way that people take for granted, honestly. When I started training in the Green Witchcraft tradition, one of the things that we talked about a lot was the relationship between people and plants. And we did this through, we do weed walks. So you walk around your property, your area, walk in the woods, and you're cataloging, you're understanding what plants are and where they are in your specific venue.
Right.
How close they are to you and your house. So if I walk out my front door and there's a dandelion out in the front sidewalk, or if a half a mile away, there's a tree that wasn't there a year ago, each of these plants is saying something specific. So my best example. So every month I walk the boundaries of the property, make sure everything's okay. There's nothing that's not supposed to be there. Reinforce the protection and do all that stuff. And I noticed, this was 6 years ago, I'm walking around the edge of the property and there's a bunch of poke that popped up along one side of the fence. It had never been there before. It's in a shaded area, so it shouldn't have been there anyway. It's a full sun plant. It's considered a weed. If you're outside, you'll see this right around August. It'll get about 6 feet tall. It's got giant green leaves and it makes little purple berries on it. Kids make ink out of it and they play with, you know, make potions. So it's a very common weed. I noticed this whole flank of it on one side of the fence. There it is.
There you go.
So this very specific plant, but technically it's poisonous.
It is poisonous.
Oh yeah. So
don't eat those berries.
we take very good care with working with those. And I say, okay, well, if it's in the backyard, it's behind me and it's poisonous. So it's a protective plant, because if a plant can protect itself, it can protect you. So your roses, raspberry, blackberry, all those canes, those are all protective magic. It's okay. It's behind me, protecting me for something I can't see. So what is it? So I have to go through my life and see where there could be some protective issues at hand. And I found out probably a week later, I had a stalker. It was a dangerous situation. I wound up needing to involve the authorities. They're serious business, but I would not have been alerted to the issue if Poke hadn't been like, excuse me, there's a problem here. You need to pay attention to this. If Poke hadn't reached out, if I hadn't had that attention to that part of my life, it might have taken a little bit longer before I realized the danger. And wow. I'm very thankful to Poke at this point.
I would say so. Yeah, no. You know, that's interesting. Because like I said, growing up in Kansas, you know, real small country town, you know, we had dandelions everywhere, and there's not one person I know, which I'm surprised, you know, even my grandmother, who grew up during the Depression, you know, my dad was born in the Depression, they didn't use dandelions. I never heard about even using dandelions in salads and stuff like that until maybe 15 years ago, and I was like, dandelions? But what can, like, dandelions do for you? I mean, how do you cook them? Do you have to cook them? Can you just pop them in your mouth? How do you do that?
If you are a coffee drinker and you're looking to add a little bit more health benefit, a lot of people roast dandelion roots and blend it with their chicory coffee. So you get the flavor of coffee, get a nice energetic boost.
Right.
But this, it supports your liver and your kidneys in doing their jobs and making sure we're clean enough to continue living.
Right.
You don't have to go on dialysis. So you, it's very common to take as a tincture. So you chop up the root in little bits and put it in 100 proof vodka. So it's for 6 to 8 weeks. And you take a couple drops at a time, maybe in tea or in your other beverages, because it does not taste good.
I was going to say, it's probably pretty bitter, isn't it?
It is definitely bitter. Just the pinch of the leaves, you can see how bitter it is.
Right.
If you've ever tried to lick the milk.
I've nibbled on it and I was like, oh God.
Yeah, very bitter. So dandelion leaves, you can throw in your salads with like your arugulas and your other bitter herbs that you're adding for some flavor, but it's not the whole constituency of the salad, because again, that's very bitter. So you can eat the whole plant. The whole plant is very beneficial. You can put the blooms in your salads. It's really helpful for your liver and your kidney functions.
All right, so we're going to get into some of these potions and stuff that we use with herbs and stuff like that. My biggest thing is, you know, 150, 200 years ago, when maybe a lot of these herbs were starting to be used, they didn't have pesticides. They didn't have, you know, all these poisons that we're putting into the air. How do we now, even though we're like, oh, this is good for us, like my dad, he used to take Roundup and spray dandelions. So how do we know what, even if it grows in our yard, how do we know somebody from before us did not spray or, put poison in the ground and now we're eating poison? How do we know it's good for us?
It depends on how old the property line is. So if you've had it for 10 years, right, you should be fine. You know whether or not you've used Roundup on it.
Right.
10 years is the benchmark that the federal government uses to ordain organic or not.
Right.
So
okay.
When we go to our farmers markets and people say, oh, is this organic? Not the thing.
Hmm.
To be able to use the O word, the federal government charges those farmers an arm and two legs to be able to use the word organic before they even make a profit.
Right.
You have to sign over access to your property. The federal government could show up at 3 o'clock in the morning to make sure you're not putting pesticides on your stuff. And there's a lot of regulation that goes into it. It sounds great, but a lot of farms can't afford that. So rather than going to your local farmers market and saying, is this organic? Because they can't use that word unless they pay the government for it.
Right.
Instead, ask them what chemicals you use on this property. Organic doesn't mean lack of chemicals. It just means the stuff that they use has to be natural.
Hmm.
So it's not necessarily a all or nothing venture.
Right.
So instead, get to know your local farmers. Ask them what they use,
why
they use it. Because honestly, I worked in greenhouses for 10 years. Those chemicals are really expensive, like really, really expensive. So your local mom and pop shop usually doesn't use them because they're expensive. And it really cuts into their ability to have a profit.
Right.
There are some products like apples, you're almost guaranteed that for them to have something used on them because they're such a fragile fruit.
Hmm.
So the best thing I can tell you is get to know your farmers, first of all. Two, look at the age of your home and your land. You'll know a lot more readily whether they've been using Roundup or they've used anything like that.
Right.
And keep your yard as natural as possible. What we understand as a lawn is a monoculture left over from pre-French Revolution. Like, it was a way for people to say, I own all this land and I'm so in control of it. We planted a monoculture.
Right.
It's completely pointless. So a little bit of dandelion isn't going to hurt you.
Is there something that's, say, like manure? I mean, that's a great fertilizer, natural fertilizer. But let's say that somebody 5 years ago used pesticides. Is there something that naturally we can spray on our lawn or add to the lawn that could actually help cleanse it faster?
Irrigation is the best way.
Just irrigating it.
Yeah, the 10-year number talks about washing it down into the layers of the soil.
Right.
So fresh irrigation is great. If you live in an area where there's Japanese beetles, for example, they get used. People use either beetle bags or heavy sprays.
Right.
My favorite thing in the world. It's not a spray. It's not a bag. You can look in your gardening catalogs. They're called nematode sponges. It's a little sponge. You can cut it in a couple pieces. There are microscopic nematodes impregnated into the sponge. You put it in the soaker, water your lawn with it, and these microscopic things go and live under the ground, they mature, and all they eat is beetle larvae.
Oh, really?
So you spray once, and you're good for 10 years.
Nice.
Those nematodes will burrow through the ground, and they'll eat all those Japanese beetles, and you don't have to worry about them eating your cabbage roses.
Right.
There's always going to be a beneficial understanding and a beneficial balance.
All right, so we have about 10 minutes left, and we have to get to this. I mean, is there any type of potions or herbs or anything that you can put together? Because Valentine's Day is coming up in a few days. Like love potions. What is a love potion, and is there something you can make at home, or do you need to go to a witch to do this, or how does one make a love potion?
So love potions are substances that are aphrodisiac. They arouse those feelings.
Right.
So one of the most popular ones, especially for Valentine's Day arena, is an herb called Damiana. It's an aphrodisiac. It gets put in wine, like a gentle mulled wine with this Damiana flavor, allows the people who ingest it to feel more amorous towards each other. It's very easy. It's very easy to do. But if you are not necessarily imbibing alcohol at the moment, a rose petal tea or a rose hip tea is still going to carry those same understanding associations. You're looking for plants or flowers or fruits that carry the associations of Venus for that love and beauty and sex and lust.
Right.
So that includes most of the fruits, anything that has a stone, cherries, apricots, they're all in the rose family. Blackthorn, so your slow gin that comes from blackthorn is associated with love and aphrodisiacs. So it's all about creating an arena or creating an area where people are given permission to get in touch with their romantic side or their lustful side. So there's lots of different things that are you can find in the grocery store to make an aphrodisiac punch with. Strawberry, half of the fruit section. I mean,
yeah, don't make it don't make it in the grocery store, because
don't do that.
Yeah, because you take it home.
We get in trouble with that.
Right.
One of my favorite things, it's in Blackthorn's Botanical Brews. There's a way to create fruit syrups to flavor sodas or cocktails. Oh, use a nice cocktail base. The one that the most popular is a strawberry version. So you get 1 cup of vinegar, 1 cup of sugar, and 1 cup of strawberries. You set it in a bowl, leave it there for 2 days. The vinegar breaks the cell wall and lets all the fruit flavor, sugar, and water out of the fruit and into the syrup.
Oh, wow.
So you can mix it with a nice Uncle Val's Botanical Gin and some seltzer water, and you have a really lovely aphrodisiac cocktail that took no effort, 5 minutes. And the best part about it, it's called a shrub when you the fruit, water, and the fruit, sugar, and vinegar. It's called a shrub.
Right.
They're easy to do. You can do it with fruit that's getting ready to go bad that would have gone bad anyway. It works. It still works with out of season fruit.
Mm.
So the watermelon you found in March,
right?
You know, it tastes like stale styrofoam.
Right.
You put it into this. It actually releases all that flavor into the syrup that you wouldn't have gotten just by eating that lovely watermelon. It smelled nice when you put it in your mouth. It just tastes like static. That watermelon releases all that flavor into the soda, then it's a really lovely beverage. It doesn't taste like vinegar anymore. It just tastes like a sweet, tangy syrup. For that one, I used a Prosecco vinegar base. So it's sparkly. It's very light on the palate. So it worked very well with the watermelon and the strawberry. But you can use fruits, vegetables, herbs, all sorts of things. And that one's even talked about in the Bible. Ruth drinking a shrub. Right there while they're out toiling out in the fields. It's one of the oldest concoctions, the oldest drinks, beverages on the planet.
You sound like a bartender too.
Well, thank you.
Right.
That was my favorite part about writing Blackthorn Botanical Brews, was getting to really dive in and experience all these beautiful additions that culture has been given just by our fruits and vegetables and our love for experimenting with them.
Well, and somebody in the chat room, and I was going to ask the same thing, is, you know, with the world the way it is, we've had a lot of negative, you know, we're on the verge of war, we have a divide in our country, we have, you know, religious wars, we have all kinds of different things going on. What can we do, you know, through witchcraft, through herbs, through potions, for protection? You know, if we're not going to be able to protect the world, how do we protect ourselves?
Beautiful question. Blackthorn's Protection Magic talks about this. It'll be out in 2 weeks from Wiser Books. Yes. My favorite thing to remind people is that we have agency. You have agency. I have agency. We can work this together. The best thing you can do to protect yourself and your home and your family is to make a pot of tea and invite your neighbor over.
Oh, really?
That's building resilience easy. In your community reminds us that we are not us and them. We're all just people.
Right.
So that especially the older neighbor who's sort of standoffish and, you know, Gladys Kravitz looking at our window at the neighborhood, invite her over for tea, invite her out, make some cookies, sit down and have a drink with them. People are looking for connection. And the ones who are the crabbiest and the ones who are the hair trigger, they need it the most.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be included. They just don't know how to make it. So I'm going to push you away before you can push me away first. Open your door, open the door to your home, and make sure that those people know that they are loved and they are welcome in your home. Until they get to know you, it's easy to make assumptions about that witch down the street. She must murder puppies or whatever awful thing people say.
Right.
It's easy to other people until they get to know you. So open your door and invite them in. make a loaf of bread and send it over to the neighbor kids.
Yeah.
You're worried about COVID? Great. Here's the responsible offering. My neighbor started bringing me duck eggs. I started sending her homemade fruit roll-ups for her kids.
Oh, like, wow.
It's very easy to other somebody until you get to know them.
And they said, love that. Peace through tea parties.
Yes.
I love it. Well, that, you know what, it's funny because, you know, again, I always go back to my roots because growing up, you know, if it was a small town, everybody knew everything about other people. And we did have our, you know, Miss Kravitz and stuff, but people were there for each other. If somebody passed away, you know, here come the food and the, you know, wishes of good health and support and Christmas, what people would bring stuff to the elderly and, you know, but here in California, where I'm at now, it's hard to do that. It's hard to people, if you even say hi to somebody here, they go, why are you talking to me type of thing. So it is harder for, you know, in the cities, not saying it's not possible, but it is harder for people to open that door. But I love that. And for some reason over the years, I've worked as a physical therapy aide. I was a fitness trainer. I was a weight trainer. And I always seemed to attract the most difficult people. But it is true that for some reason, I just had that knack of breaking through those walls and find out that they were amazing people that just need some love or just need attention or just need to, you know, be listened to. And I think you're absolutely right. So those people just mostly there's a reason for their bitterness, their anger, their grouchiness or whatever it is. So I love it. All right. So for the last thing, because I can't believe the time has already gone by, but for the last thing, what's the easiest potion someone can do at home? That for anything, you know, if it's for good luck or, you know, I'm going for a job interview or, you know, I'm having a child or I want to have a child. Is there something that it's easy to put together at home, that they can just do, you know, from what's that in Whole Foods or out in the garden or something that they can do, today or tonight, this weekend?
Chamomile tea.
What, chamomile?
Chamomile tea.
Oh my God, chamomile, I haven't heard that in a while.
Chamomile is great for luck. People used to wash their hands with chamomile tea before they went to gambling. There's a lot of gambling luck that's associated with it, but general good luck as well. You can hang a little tea bag in the attic. It'll protect your house from lightning. It is protective. It's calmative, especially you have that, I'm going to go for a job interview, nerves. Drink that about an hour before you go. It'll actually help cool you down to the point where you're not, no panic sweat. You're more self-assured. You know where you're going. You don't give a clammy handshake. Chamomile tea is one of the best things and one of the most magical ingredients you can have in your house.
I love that. I've heard chamomile tea pretty much since I've been a child. I mean, they've talked about that for a long time, but I haven't heard that for forever because now, again, they have different types of teas for everything now. So chamomile, I think, kind of become not as popular.
That is definitely the case. I've had the tea shop. It'll be 8 years old next week.
Oh,
and wow. Yeah, chamomile is one of the best plants out there. It has that sweet apple flavor to it. It's self-assured. It's projective. It reminds you that you have the confidence to get to project yourself, and you know wherever you know where everything goes, know where everything's been. It's a great herb, and it's pretty universally safe. The only thing we say, you know, try not to take medicinal amounts of it if you're in the first trimester of a pregnancy, but outside of that, it's great for hypertension. It's great for all the sorts of little nibbly things that might be wrong with us, and it's a very self-assured plant ally.
I will have to try it. And then what about prayer and just sending out good thoughts for people that are sick, that are alone, that, you know, even though you don't talk to somebody, what about just good intentions? They're sending good thoughts to people. Is that considered somewhat Wicca? Because really, that's, you know, I mean, that's through
pretty
spirit.
Universal. It's definitely one of the things that we do offer, one of the things we do participate in, but it's so much more simple than that. Even just going into your junk drawer and grabbing a birthday candle and sitting still for a minute to think about Sue's going into labor tonight at midnight, or good thoughts for easy birth with the baby. Those very simple actions of, with or without the candle, stopping what you're doing, put your phone down, not scrolling, just bringing your mindfulness to one specific point in time, even for a few seconds, is something that we don't allow ourselves a lot. We're so busy going and doing. Our culture it really rejects taking any care or time for yourself at all.
Yeah.
And so giving yourself permission to just center yourself for that moment, to think about your friends, your loved ones, it's not only a gift for them, but it's a gift for ourselves, because taking that time and giving yourself permission to just not be for a minute is beautiful and actually makes a really big impact in your life. I was working on mindfulness meditations as, in high school, there's hormones and there's people and everyone's panicking all the time. Just taking a minute to sit with your thoughts is terrifying, but it also is really good for us.
Yeah, this old mind, sometimes you're like, just be quiet. All right, and this popped in my head, or I'd say goodbye right now, but what about people that have lost someone? What is a good potion or meditation or something that you can connect with that spirit to bring calm to yourself?
The very first recipe in Blackthorn's Botanical Magic is I went by herbs. So it's the Angelica section. Angelica as a plant, the story goes that Angelica sprung up from the ground where the Archangel Michael touched his toe to earth for the first time. So you can find it in the actual plant. You can find it in essential oil form. It is the most potent ally I know of for grief.
Mm.
So there's actually two recipes in the beginning and under Angelica. One is a funeral grief.
Right.
And one is a blessing for the person who has crossed over. I was lucky enough to work with some funeral directors and morticians and talk about the things that they go through, the things that they are able to provide for families. And so they'll allow you, you can see the loved one, and you can anoint their hands with this Angelica oil. And there's some for the person who is undergoing that grief. Was very sad. I had call to use it. The book is dedicated to my aunt who passed after I signed the contract for this book, before it came to fruition. So it's dedicated in her memory. And the Angelica is such a beautiful, empowering plant for grief.
Right. And that's great. And if you think about it, our bodies, majority of us, are replaced into the ground. My mother was, she wanted to be cremated, and I spread her ashes on the beach where, she out here in California, because that's where she was born, and then up in Ojai Mountains so she could have a beautiful view. We go back to the earth where all plants are created. So I think, you're doing such a great job, and your knowledge of this is amazing, and I really thank you for writing all the books and being award-winning and best-selling, and I can see why. Where do people find you, follow you, and all that good stuff, so if they want to pick up your books?
You can get my books from blackthornbotanicals.com. You can read the free first two chapters of each one of my books on amyblackthorn.com. You can get free downloads of all the books, the first two chapters of each of them. I want you to know that they resonate with where you are right now when you buy it. They're available wherever fine books are sold. You can also find me on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok under Amy Blackthorn Author. You'll be able to find me right there. My email address is all over the place. If you ever have any questions, you want to understand something, you need some questions answered, you can send an instant message. You can really find your way to where you want to be. Each of those places has a different area where you can find me. And I do this because I want to see that light bulb moment where the light comes on over your head and you're able to connect what I'm talking about to something happening in your life. Like that's, I get paid in that.
Right.
So it's important that people know that there are no dumb questions. They're just people who are looking to connect with something greater than themselves.
And I see that you also have a class, a Black Magic class. Is that right? Or
Blackthorn School of Magic.
Yeah, School of Magic. There we go.
There's lots of different video classes on there. You can download each one. There's some free resources on there that link you to my YouTube page where you can, there's free classes on incense. There's all sorts of individual links under there. So.
Well, great. Thank you so much, Amy. And appreciate you always being a light for the world, because I can see that, you know, with your knowledge, I can see that you're bringing joy to people and also answers. And so that's what I think human beings are constantly searching. So, well, thank you, everybody, for being a part of Truth Be Told. And thank you, Amy, for being here. If you guys would please share this show, leave a comment. You know, like I said, I loved hearing all kinds of comments just so I can improve and, you know, tell me how amazing Amy is. And please support her. And please support Robert Hensley on Mondays at 3:00 with Minuteman Report. Bonnie Burkert with Truth Be Told Transformation. That's all your shamans and gurus and all that good stuff. Bonnie does such a great job. But and thank you for always joining me here on Fridays at 3:00. Until next time, I'm Tony Sweet. Bye-bye. This has been another episode of Truth Be Told. Thank you so much for watching. Recorded live at UBN Go Studios in Burbank, California. Join us on social media. Facebook, Truth Be Told Radio. Instagram, Truth Be Told Paranormal. Go to Truth Be Told Worldwide for more information on upcoming shows. This has been another episode.